Blog Talk Radio.
You know what gang violence is? Mostly, and the people don't want you to hear this, somebody shoots your family member. So of course you retaliate. You know what I mean? Same thing the U.S. does, except nobody even shot their family members. You know, they see somebody bomb a school and all these people get killed, so the United States feel like, ooh, that's messed up, we gotta go show them who's the real killer. This country was built on gangs. You know, I think this country still is run on gangs. Republicans, Democrats, the police department, the FBI, the CIA, those are gangs. You know what I mean? The correctional officers. I had a correctional officer tell me straight up, we the biggest gang in New York State. Straight up.
Introduce a drug called crack to a ghetto team. Got a lot for born niggas now. Play of what it be like. When will niggas see they got us leading with three strikes? Can't seem to focus, hopeless. With violent thoughts, I'm hopeless. Got the devil petrified. Hot from my heart to focus. And so I learn to earn my currency in overtime. Affiliated, clearly click a military mind. May God forgive us, so we dwell inside of paradise. Thugged out and drug dealers from the womb to the block. My live mind got me surviving five rounds. My 45 got me fortified with live rounds. When shit tick, we block hits. When I block stick, all hell, I don't bear wrath. That's apocalypse. Forever ghetto necessary, preaching food stamps. Outlaw thug niggas never left the food stamps.
I'm a real live dick from front to back. To my niggas in the world who block the back.
DJ
from my soldiers to death, from my soldiers to death. When I fuck my soldiers to death, from my soldiers to death. We got the real live dick from front to back. To my niggas in the world who block the back. From my soldiers to death. From my soldiers to death, where the fuck my soldiers at? From my soldiers to death.
Now I was born as a rebel, making trouble for the devil. Take this gangbang shit to a whole nother level. Can you feel me now? Armies in every city, definition of power. Players, but you let me see the war is the prophecy. Survival is the strategy. Rest in peace to my comrades, that's the seat. Organize the streets in time, yeah. Any devil petrified of a nigga in his right mind. They tell us that we hopeless and hellbound. It's for the brothers and penitentiary jail bam. I got you in my heart till the day I die. Think of the damage we could do if we wasn't high. Can you picture me low? If the thugs laugh. Political contracts and bloodbath. From a Tulsa core up in the rockets, though they got you. I never let them stop me. The struggle continues.
Now, if we do want to live a thug life and a gangster life and all of that, okay. So stop being cowards and let's have a revolution. But we don't want to do that. Dudes just want to live a character. They want to be cartoons. But if they really wanted to do something, it was that tough. All right, let's start our own country. Let's start a revolution. Let's get out of here. Let's do something.
Real live shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world who rock the rack. Where my soldiers are at? Where my soldiers are at? Where the fuck my soldiers at? Where my soldiers are at? We got the real live shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer. And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad brothers!
Free the Soledad brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today. You hear me, Eric?
Starring Gary
Dorden from TVCSI.
This is the military, David.
Free land. Rebel Share Ingredients. Welcome to another edition of your Universal Radio. Your host, Bumani Shakir. And while I go at our Georgia University Radio, our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal, to eradicate culture eating from our new African prisoners. Our third goal, to transfer the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal, to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities. Our fifth goal, to prepare a new African prisoner for release, reduce new African recidivism. And our overall goal, and transfer the whole pre-industrial slave complex, which is the prison system, to the big institution of learning through education and means. Whereas we prepare brothers and sisters for society by transferring their criminal mentality to a revolutionary mentality, so they come to society and create institutions and programs to fulfill the people's needs. We also want to acknowledge that YSL goes to Salama, which is Black August Salutations, Abasi Leo, which is Black August Greetings. This is the month of Black August, a month of resistance, month of commemoration, and a month to organize, educate, transform the mind state, transform yourself inside, outside, transform your community, transform your family, also nation build, community build, things of that nature. Before I bring in our guest tonight, I'd like to go a few events that happened in history during this month. And the first event is a commemoration, a dedication to Gaddi Albadelli. I'm going to read this a document. It said, another of our great leaders, Gaddi Albadelli, Milton R. Henry, has made a transition to a greater sphere. Some had known him as a meticulous, fearless lawyer after service during World War II as a pilot with the 332nd Fighter Group and then graduated from Lincoln University and in 1957 for Yale Law School and bring his wife, Marilyn, and younger daughter, Shannon to Pontiac, Michigan. He soon opened practice there. He was served for several years, also in the Pontiac City Council. But for young lawyers like Mazelle Soule and Cornelius Pitt, Milton's style of work and pick up research and cites amendment and legal logic elevated the style and positive results for all Black attorneys in the Detroit area. Several became judges on Detroit Recorder Court. Some have known Milton best as a minister of the Christian faith, the founder of Christ Presbyterian Church in Southfield, Michigan. But for years before his recent illness, he served as senior minister and donated his salary to the upkeep of the church and kept his doors and arms open to aspiring younger ministers. Few among those, many who were elevated by his rendering of the gospel in terms more consistent with the essentials of Christ's own ministry, knew that Milton was one of those chosen ones in history who have had a humbling personal experience with the Creator. He was in the forest in Ghana, West Africa. It opened for him not simply how the gospel must be used to help our people in our struggle for justice and political and religious freedom, opened for him also the meaning of the meetings he had held while an undergraduate student at Lincoln University before the military, listening to and talking with Kwame Nkrumah, other leaders of the African fight for freedom. Still other knew Gaddi and honored him as a revolutionary, a leader in the day, 1960. A United States government in its structure at a nation, state, and local level are waging an actual war against Black people who sought freedom and justice through the Black Panther Party, Dr. Kringle Us Movement, and the leadership of Malcolm X, Ahmad Malik El-Shabbar, Brother Omar Wiley. While never a member of the Nation of Islam, Brother Gaddi Albadelli bestowed these names in a reading and religious ceremony by the late Dr. Ishaka Musa Barashango, during the younger brother, the late Dr. Lawrence George Henry, as a follower and supporter of Malcolm X. As a brother of Omar Wiley's brutal assassination in February 1965, Gaddi led and organized the Malcolm X Society Center in Detroit, often meeting Gaddi's and Maryland home in a warm dining room, but with small but important followers in Brooklyn, Boston, and Los Angeles. It was the Malcolm X Society, which through Gaddi and his brother Lawrence and Amari, organized in March 1968 Detroit's Black Government Convention, which founded the Prison Government Republic of Africa. Gaddi served as the first vice president, the higher office in the United States. He used his great skills and the Black leading to return the prison government elected president, Robert Williams, to Detroit from the Republic of China, which had been given his well-known Black revolutionary sanctuary. As some of the movements began, his work in Louisiana and Mississippi, preparing a plebiscite for people to vote to make certain black majority counties and parishes in these states into an independent country, at least as strong as Canada. United States and white power structure unleashed its guns against RNA people assembled in Detroit New Bethel Baptist Church in 1969 and again in Jackson, Mississippi on August 18, 1971, a battle which the police and the FBI lost. Milton and Marilyn then made a sacrifice to secure the temporary release of Marv from prison, pending trials on RNA 11. Continuing to practice law in Detroit, guiding Raymond Willis, joined by other outstanding lawyers from Mississippi and elsewhere, Fred Banks, John Brennan, Ernest Jones, mounted a brilliant defense of the RNA 11 in the federal trial. But the beloved Mississippi jury and U.S. District Judge William Nixon later jailed and impeached for corruption, found all defendants guilty. Meanwhile, Guidi pursued and earned formal religious degrees for his work, for his study and work at Ashland Seminary, Ashland, Ohio. He is remembered for defending and involving black law students against discrimination at the University of Detroit. Shortly after, he worked with the NAACP in getting the U.S. Supreme Court to accept an affirmative action program, University of Michigan Law School. Born on August 20, 1919, Milton will be well remembered for the God gifts he gave and inspiration insight he left for all those who love him, free land. Also, I want to note that Guidi Abadeli was officially the first acting president of the Virginia Republic of Africa. Robert Williams never served in the capacity of president. He also won the founding member of the Gold Group of Advanced Leadership. Another founding member of the American Met Society. He also was an active member in RAM, as well as an understudy up on El Mahal Malik Shabazz, as well as his brother Amari Abdelli, a researcher for El Mahal Malik Shabazz, when he had the Organization of African American Unity, and also the Mosman Incorporated. So Malcolm also was a member of RAM as well. You know, those are just some of the things I wanted to mention. It's a couple other events I wanted to mention too as well. You know, August 30th in 1800, Gabriel Prosser organized a slave rebellion against their oppression. Now, it was thwarted because individuals became informants. Also, August 30, 1948, Chairman Fred Hampton Sr. was born. A staunch revolutionary, and he always said, "I am a revolutionary." Now, those are just some events that happened during this month that express black auger resistance in regards to the aspects of it. You know, and I'd like to thank everybody who's been coming to our platforms in 2014, the ones who've been supporting us, supporting our radio show, the ones who've been supporting Georgia University since the inception in year 2000, and all the other individuals that have actually been doing the work, seen and unseen. I respect you all. And all due respect, I'd like to welcome to the show tonight, Brother Haki Kwela Shakur. Free the land.
Free the land, Conrad.
Body we need, sir. How you doing, good brother?
I'm doing good. Everything's good, man. Way Usi Augusti, you know, Black August Resistance. Everything's going well.
True indeed. True indeed, man. First, I would thank you for coming to the platform to show you how to understand it. Thank you for the work you did in the past, present, and the work you can do in the future, right? For the people who are listening, people going to be listening in the future, tell the people about you, who you are, so they can understand who is actually talking, where you're coming from.
Right on. Yes, sir. Well, my name is Haki Kwela Shakur. I'm coming out of Virginia, in which we call Nat Turner, Gabriel Prosserville land. It's in central Virginia. I'm an organizer and an advocate of political prisoners and freeing political prisoners and prisoners of war. I do a lot of work in history, so I consider myself a new African historian. I do a lot of work with various organizations, but I am the national spokesperson for the August 3rd Collective, also working with other organizations like George Jackson University, Malcolm X Grassroots, the Jericho Movement, Richmond Jericho, right here in Richmond, in Virginia. And, yeah, that's, you know, most of my work is done in those two areas and things of that nature. So, yeah, and I also have a YouTube channel where I've just created that goes by the name of the New Africa History Channel that I've been doing for some years now, but I finally got the direction I want to taken in, so I'm starting to, you know, put all that together right now as well. So I've been, over the last decade or so, a lot of people, you know me from being online and, you know, putting up a lot of videos and educating a lot of people about the New African Independence Movement and the history of the struggle of the New African Independence Movement and political prisoners and prisoners of war. So that's a little bit about me.
Okay, I appreciate that. Okay, you mentioned Gabriel Prosser and Nat Turner, right? You know, I just mentioned the August 3rd and 1800, right? Tell a little bit about the incident in regards to August 3rd and 1800 in regards to Gabriel Prosser. Give us the insight of what happened, what transpired during that day for the people who are listening now, people who are listening in the future.
Yeah, I definitely can speak on that. As far as the Gabriel Prosser's Rebellion is what they call it, but many individuals here in Virginia, myself as well, but we don't really call him Gabriel Prosser. As far as his last name anyway, we really don't use the Prosser because we know Gabriel, he never liked that last name, but we just use the last name. Because that's the only way you really can find any information about Gabriel. So you got to use the whole, you know, colonial last name of his. The man who owned them was a guy not by the name of Prosser. And Prosser Plantation was here right on the outskirts of Richmond, Virginia, in a place called Henrico County. It's just like right outside the city of Richmond, Virginia. It's on the outskirts. It's a big county here in Virginia. And he was an enslaved political prisoner on the Prosser Plantation. And so throughout the years, Gabriel, you know, he was always rebellious. He was rebellious from, if you read his story, he's been rebellious ever since he started to, you know, come into his own consciousness of what enslavement was and the brutal, harsh conditions and the inhumane treatment of slavery that was being put down on him and other individuals and our people in general, period. And over the years, it was just a lot of, you know, him organizing on various things. He was a blacksmith, by the way. He was a blacksmith, and we know a lot of blacksmiths have a lot of relations back to West Africa and Central Africa when it comes to blacksmith work and iron smelting and things of that. So he was a tall man, a tall, dark-skinned man. He had a couple of scars on his face and things of that nature, and he did a lot of work in that iron smelting and blacksmithing industry where Richmond, Virginia, and Virginia was actually the center of the iron industry. They're like the beginning of the economy of the iron industry here for the capitalist empire of America. It started right here in Virginia. So he was doing a lot of work, and he was being rented out all across different various parts of the region of Central Virginia and Virginia and things of that nature. And a couple of other guys, I can't really think of their names right now, but it's a couple of other guys also who Gabriel was starting to organize with, and they started planning this rebellion in 1799. Yeah, like around 1799, they started calculating and plotting, planning this rebellion because he got a lot of influence. The Haitians did in the Haitian slave rebellion in 1791, so that put a lot of influence into Gabriel and opened his mind up to, you know, resistance and what he should be doing as a new African, as an African brother, to try to help his people gain freedom from the inhumane capitalist system of slavery. So in that summertime, somewhere in the springtime of 1800, Gabriel was starting to organize different enslaved peoples across different plantations here in Central Virginia and things of that nature. And what gave him the advantage, and he was such a great strategizer, and that's one of the reasons why we call him General Gabriel, is the fact that he could move around to various plantations because he was being rented out by the man that owned him, Mr. Prosser. And he would take advantage of that. Like, he would go to several different plantations in the surrounding area of Richmond, like in the county areas, like in Waco, Caroline County, different various Petersburg, which is known as a old Confederate city, a historic Confederate City here in Central Virginia. And so in those surrounding areas, he would go to different plantations and hold secret meetings for like minds and getting with like individuals. And his wife also was also an organizer in this slave rebellion as well. She went by a coincidence. Her name was Nanny as well, after the great Jamaican Maroon leader in Jamaica. Her name was Nanny as well. And so him and his wife started to formulate the plan initiate a slave rebellion so they could try to free their people and smash the capital system of slavery in Virginia. So the plan was to get all these Africans to come far as, and some of these Africans came as far as North Carolina that was involved in the whole conspiracy. And the plan was to strike on August 30th, 1800. It was a date before that, but I can't really think of the specifics of the date before that. It was a date that they was going to move on the rebellion before that, but they decided to wait and change it to August 30th, 1800, for a specific reason. And what they was going to do, they was going to enter the city. They was going to march in the city, 1,000-plus strong of enslaved new African peoples, just men, women, teenagers, you know what I'm saying, kids, and whoever wanted to participate in the rebellion. They was going to march on the city of Richmond, because people got to realize around this time, this is when Richmond was formulating and starting to become the capital of the Confederacy States of the South. So Gabriel and them wanted to capture the city and capture the governor at that time, James Monroe, and he would later become the president of the United States of America. So they wanted to enter the city, march 1,000 strong, and they wanted to put down an assault on the city armory, where all the arms and all those type of things were being held in the central part of Richmond, Virginia. So they knew they had to make it to the city in order to get the arms, so they can get more arms to arm up so they could take over. So their whole plan was to get everybody to come from each section of the city, the north side, the south side, where I live at, where I'm from, the south side of Richmond. They wanted people to come from the east end, the west end, and all just meet up in the capital of the city and kidnap James Monroe and force him to release all the enslaved New African peoples in Virginia. And the whole core basis of what he was trying to do was Gabriel, if he could get that victory, if he could capture the city and kidnap James Monroe and force him to end slavery, him and other leaders of the rebellion wanted to formulate an independent state, an independent nation carved out of Virginia. But the only thing that deteriorated that whole mission was it was a bad, violent storm that took place that night. And little did Gabriel knew, at the same time as this horrific storm was taking place, the bridge that they was going to try to cross got flooded out. So they couldn't cross the bridge. The bridge was so flooded. It was so, because back then it was a lot of trees. It wasn't like how it is today. It was mainly forestry area, more trees and mud and things of that nature. So they couldn't cross the bridge, and it got flooded. And at the same time, it was these two individuals back on the Prosser's plantation, ran back to Prosser, the plantation owner, and informed on Gabriel. These were two individuals who had an important role in the rebellion, and they went back and told Prosser's, their slave owner, Prosser, about what Gabriel and them was trying to do. So he called up James Monroe and warned James Monroe that it was some enslaved people that were about to try to cross the river to come into the city and try to take over the city and kidnap him. So he got the heads up. They called out the Confederate militia, and they started rounding up all the people who was participating in the rebellion. Gabriel escaped on a ship. He made it as far as Norfolk, close to the Atlantic Ocean. But as he got on that ship, somebody on the ship informed on him and said that he was on the ship. And so he was captured on the ship in Norfolk and was brought back to Virginia and was put on trial.
How to dimension your colonial work. Brother's trying to sacrifice life for the cause of revolution, revolt, the aspect of independence. these same individuals, what you tell on you? Doesn't make any kind of sense, man. But, you know, that's the mind state, though, man. That fear. And that fear thinking,
yeah,
that, the conditioning program mind state, man.
That's
messed up.
And the sad thing about it, this is something that we've seen continuous throughout many slave, you know, resistance movements and a lot of slave rebellions that never, ever got the chance to reach its potential because that informant disease, it ran rampant back then and it's still running rampant today.
Yeah, even worse than now. Even worse than now, man. Sad, but the truth, you know, but, now you get rewards for it. You get rewards for it now. You know, you might become a millionaire. You might get an album. You might get a book out there. You know, you get a movie.
Yeah.
You get rewarded now. You know.
You get rewarded.
You might have your own island. It might give you an island or something. You know, you would get rewarded now for your informant action. You know, it's a badge of honor now.
We live in the era where informants are the poster boys of everything, the music, street culture, entertainment culture. You know, no matter what it is that, you know, New African people participate in 2023, informant and snitching is the poster boys.
Yeah, very instrumental, man. Pete, tell the people what your name means. You know, give us an understanding what you mean. What Hockey Credit Secure mean? Give people an understanding what that name means.
Yes, sir. Hockey Credit Secure is a mix of Swahili and Arabic. Hockey means righteous in Swahili. Kweli means truthful in Swahili. And Shakur means thankful. Or thankful to God in Arabic language. And the whole name, is ironic because when Sayika gave me that name, because it's very ironic because it was like the first name I wanted to go with, Malik. I was trying to, honor, El Haj Malik Shabazz. I wanted that name. I wanted Malik to be my first name. But it's ironic that I named my son Malik, my oldest child. His name is Malik. But in Sayika, when we and Sayika was building on names, he told me that, and that was so coincidental about it. He told me his first name that he thought about taking on before he took on Sayika was Malik as well. So that kind of made our bond even closer because he was like, man, how did you, what I'm saying? He kept asking me, like, how did you come up with that name, Malik? Because he was like, it's ironic because I wanted that to be my first name at first. I was like, I don't know, man. I just wanted to honor. Malcolm X, El Haj Malik Shabazz, I just think that name was a very powerful name. So, Sayika just kept shooting, like, different names back and forth at me and things of that nature. And then one time we talked on the phone, he was like, man, I got a name for you. It's perfect. It fits you, man. Like, this name is something that I from the time we've known each other, this is the vibe and the energy that you give me. So he was like, Hockey Kweli Shakur. And then I was like, break that down to me. And he was like, yeah. He was like, the first name is righteous. The middle name is truthful. He was like, I see nothing but truth in you. You know what I'm saying? And he was like, yeah. And then he was like, yeah, I want you to become a Shakur. So we're going to go ahead and throw the Shakur on the end of it and to make it complete, thankful. So the name is basically, righteous, truthful, and thankful individual. So that's what my name stands for.
Okay. For the people who are listening now and will listen in the future, you mentioned Sayika. Who exactly is Sayika? People who are listening. Who exactly is that?
I definitely can speak on that. Sayika. Known as Sayika Shakur, but he was formerly known as Master Kweli. And where the majority of the people, they will know him by that name, his street moniker, Master Kweli, Kweli Scott, his former colonial subject name. He's known as a popular, well-known author, but he was most infamously known as one of the notorious Crip leaders from South Central Los Angeles. And Master Cody went to prison in the late 70s, in the early 80s, and the mid 80s, and things of that nature. When he got to prison, he's one of those individuals who, when he got to prison, he started to transform himself. He was an individual that couldn't read at first, and he started to teach himself how to read when he got thrown in solitary confinement. And one of his tutors and one of his mentors is a guy by the name of Muhammad. A lot of individuals know him, and he's well known in South Central LA. He was like one of the most educated Muslim individuals that's coming out of South Central LA. And so when you can met this individual, this was the first individual that actually, you know, started to transform his mind, his consciousness, first through, you know, Islamic conversion and things of that nature. You know, a lot of individuals went through that step in their transformation. A lot of people went through the Islamic conversions and things of that. So, yes, he could take his shahada when he was in prison and things of that nature. It was when he came into the new African politics, is what I like to say. When he came across the new African politics from prison, this is what really captured him and really sparked his mind and started to develop him politically and revolutionary. So he started to transform himself. He changed his name to Sayuka Shakur because he also was getting mentorship from Dr. Mutulu Shakur at the time as well. He was, you know, communicating with Dr. Mutulu Shakur, building a relationship with him. So this is when his transformation began through Mr. Muhammad and Dr. Mutulu Shakur, the two most important individuals that transformed Sayuka into the individual we know in the New African Independence Movement. So people will know him, you know, mostly from the book he wrote while he was in solitary confinement, which is the L.A. autobiography of an L.A. gangbanger, self-titled Monster Cody. And if y'all don't have that book, you should get that book. That's a great book to read through Black August to understand who Monster Cody was and who he became in Sayuka Shakur, a new African revolutionary communist, a new African revolutionary nationalist, an individual that helped change the lives of a lot of young individuals who were gangbanging, cripping, blooding, and all types of individuals. And also, let me throw this in, he was heavily influenced by the politics of George Jackson. Sayuka Shakur had a lot of issues in prison by spreading the politics of George Jackson. Matter of fact, he was one of the first individuals that was thrown in solitary confinement in Pelican Bay. He had disseminated information about George Jackson and having a George Jackson book and writing letters and things of this nature about Black August at the time he was in Pelican Bay in 1989. So he's also known for that as well, as one of the first individuals to get thrown in solitary confinement in Pelican Bay. So, yeah, he was heavily influenced by New African politics under Dr. Mutulu Shakur, politics of the Black Guerrilla Family under George Jackson, politics under Atiba Shani, another one of his mentors. Atiba Shani, if people don't know who he is, Owusu, Yaki Yakubu, James Yaki Sales. He went by three monikers, three different names. This was the individual who played the heaviest role in his life and transformation when it comes to this new African politics, was Atiba Shani. And if people don't know who that is, they should get familiar with him as well. If you get familiar with a lot of those individuals, then you'll know who Sayuka Shakur became.
Okay. I appreciate that. I appreciate that information. You know, I over the years, you've been talking a lot about Black August, right? You know, what exactly does Black August mean to you? You know, and why did you commemorate it? Why did you commemorate it yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question, Conrad. What Black August means to me is that focus, it's that resetting. I look at Black August as a time where I can really get into my development of what I'm trying to become in this movement, and who I'm trying to become as a new African man in this society, in this empire of the United States of America, and carrying on the legacy and carrying on the you know, taking on the baton of this protracted struggle of the New African Independence Movement, and just basically who I'm trying to become as a person, a revolutionary social scientist, a black man in this society, and things of that nature. I look at Black August as that basis, that core, that month where I can actually take a look in that mirror and do the things that these elders were doing before me, who sacrificed their lives, who told us and showed us and gave us the marching orders, gave us the guidance, you see what I'm saying, to develop yourself mentally and physically, because we can't forget that aspect as well, but more so mentally, to get disciplined when it comes to revolutionary science and politics and, you know, transforming yourself, you know, out of the criminal mentality, out of the colonial mentality and those type of things. The abnormal, just the abnormal ways of the society. I look at Black August as that month and go back, critique myself, critique the things that I'm doing that I can do better with and I can get better at. You know what I'm saying? I take Black August as that time and place, even though you're supposed to be doing that 365. Because like the elders tell us, like the political prisoners tell us, the freedom fighters tell us, Black August is 365. It's not just 1 month. Because we like to get caught up in this 1 month thing and these one day things that are given to us, like holidays and, you know, different events and things of that nature that we'll do one time. And then the rest of the year we go back to what we're doing, you know, like what people like to say, falling asleep and just being, you know, in this society and just continuing to be oppressed. You see what I'm saying? So I just take Black August means everything to me because at this point in time, I can reflect, go back, reset, train, and to continue this fight, this marathon that we're trying to, you know, get through to bring into existence what we're striving for, which is an independent people, an independent nation, and things of that nature. So Black August is everything to me, you know what I'm saying, when it comes to, you know, my self-development, politically, socially, consciously. And I forgot the last part of your question. What was the last part?
What I was saying, well, I said, what did Black August mean to you, and why do you commemorate it, you know?
Okay, yeah, that's what you said. I commemorate it to honor those who came before us, the ones who took that ultimate sacrifice of armed resistance, armed struggle, the elders, the freedom fighters who were captured, who were brutally repressed, attacked, framed up, you know, set up, sent to prison during ridiculous years in the gulags, the prisons across the empire of the United States of America. All those individuals who took that ultimate sacrifice, whether it was death or being captured as a prisoner of war, a freedom fighter, and things of that nature. Those are the people that, you know, is the reason why I commemorate every Black August, because I want those individuals to never be forgotten. I want those individuals to be known about, studied, and to take their struggles and to continue this struggle and take our struggle to where we're trying to get to. So this is why I commemorate every Black August, those individuals like George Jackson, Katori Garden, W.L. Nolan, William Christmas, James McClain, Alvin Jug Miller, all those individuals, young Jonathan Jackson, James Carr, Big Jake Lewis, Tony Gibson, all those individuals, man, the prison revolutionaries, the prison organizers, the Black liberation movement struggle of prisons that people don't really know too much about. So I want to educate our people, our youth, the people who don't have no idea that these people even existed, or these, you know, these acts of resistance existed, because people fail to realize that when you're captured or when you're going through this prison system, these slave camps in the United States of America, your struggle don't end. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of people like to tend to think when people go to prison, the struggle is somehow over, or you're just done. You know, it's like like these type of things don't go on inside prison. Like racism doesn't exist in prison. Like discrimination don't exist in prison. Like oppression don't exist in prison. Torture, all the inhumane things they've been doing to our people ever since we've been brought here as political prisoners and prisoners of war. People don't realize the prison system is the biggest representation of the foundation of this colonial settler nation. People need to understand that. The prison system is the biggest symbolism of how this country was founded. You know what I'm saying? From the plantation imprisonment to the prison industrial industry and complex and things of that nature. So those are some of the main reasons why I commemorate the individuals who fought back against state repression, the individuals who fought back against the prison system, who tried to abolish the prison system, because their whole intention was to get rid of the prison system, not to just, you know, reform it or try to change it or try to make it a better place. No, we're talking about the individuals who wanted to destroy the prison system, like George Jackson and them. So the martyrs of Black August and the ancestral martyrs who led us up to this point is the reason why I commemorate Black August.
True, indeed. True. I know you mentioned earlier about Black August being 24/7, 365, right? You know, and by making that statement, you basically saying that Black August is from August the 1st to August 31st. And then, so on September the 1st, July 31st, a Black August resistance, right? And in regard to saying that, for the people who are listening, people who may not know, during the month of December 26th to January 1st, is a time called Kwanzaa, where it represents the aspect of Nguza Sabo with the seven African principles, which commemorate during that time. Where during Black August, those principles are exemplated all throughout the month and all throughout the year, such as the Ujima, mm-hmm. collective work. You know, we do collective work all the time by organizing together as collective organization, a cadre, units, and sales. And nation building and doing activities. We engage the Ujima, collected economics, by paying dues,
right.
By paying dues to your organization, by paying dues to your collective, by putting money together to purchase certain things, community center, learning centers, material for the children. We practice self-determination by learning self-defense, learning how to defend yourself politically, political education, learning how to defend yourself legally, you know. Exemplify a lot of these principles. All these principles during the month of Black August, all through the month every year, because it's Black August is a lifestyle. It's not just something you commemorate, something you do. It's a lifestyle. It's a way of being. It's a way of being. Just like a person say he or she is a vanguard for the community. He or she say he's a crip of blood of the community. He's a vice lord. That's a lifestyle. You say you're Muslim or you're EFI. That's a lifestyle. Being a revolutionary, being a socialist is a lifestyle that you embarked on. It's something you do every day. It's something you breathe, sleep, eat, shit, whatever you do. You know, that's something you do. So it's not just something just for people just to pass on and say they're doing it for likes, or they're doing it just for recognition, but they're doing it for the work, you know. So, you know, I just wanted to mention that, you know, for people who are listening now, people who are listening in the future, so they get some clarity about certain things when we mention certain things and they see certain things, right? You know, because there within that month, a lot of training going on, a lot of educating, a lot of organizing. And one of the best things about this month is the transformation aspect of it. During this time, it's highly encouraged that you come out Black Olive creating something. You don't create the business. You don't gain an African name. You don't create an institution. You don't create a program. You don't write a book. You don't do something that's beneficial, not just for you, but just for the people. You know, did something that's beneficial.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying? During that time, because the transformation aspect, you know. You know, that's the best thing about transformation.
And for the generations that's coming behind us.
True, indeed. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That was about, for real, you know. Can you tell a little bit about what BAM mean and BAR means? Can you tell us a little about what that means so people can get an understanding?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I, you know, I'm just going to, you know, put it simple and plain, you know, how it was taught to me. Like, you know, it's two aspects. It's twofold when it comes to, you know, Black August, you know, and the comrades, the elders behind the walls, other California prison systems, because we gotta put an emphasis on that. People need to understand where Black August came from and who are the originators and the creators of Black August. It's the political prisoners, the freedom fighters out of the California prison systems, and you know, and other prisons too. A lot of other, you know, comrades and elders who participated back then in those times in the '70s and things of that nature. But we must let these individuals be known about, because a lot of these individuals who keeping Black August alive is in the California prison systems right now. You know what I'm saying? Carrying on that torch and the legacy of George and the guerrillas and things of that nature. So I just wanted to put that in there so people could do their research on that as well. But Bam Bar is basically twofold, you know, aspect of Black August and what Black August is standing on. Bam means Black August Memorial. You know, that's the month, Black August Memorial. And what Black August Memorial is, it consists of those eight specific martyrs, those eight specific New African martyrs that lives that were taken, you know, the sacrifice, you know, and the ultimate price, which was death. You know what I'm saying? So Black August Memorial means to me commemorating and venerating and teaching and educating about those eight specific martyrs, which is Katari Garden, W.L. Nolan, George Jackson, Jonathan Jackson, James McClain, William Christmas, Alvin Jug Miller, you know what I'm saying, Cleveland Edwards. Those are the specific eight martyrs that we commemorate and we venerate during Black August Memorial Month. And a lot of people don't know about a lot of those individual names that I just mentioned. So this is why Black August Memorial is so important. You know, and I get the Black August Resistance part as well. That's the second fold of it. Bar means Black August Resistance. But the most important part of Black August, period, is the Black August Memorial. We should be making that the basis of anything that we're doing when it comes to honoring and commemorating Black August martyrs, the individuals who are the reason why this month even exists. From W.L. Nolan, from when W.L. Nolan was organizing before he met George Jackson. You know what I'm saying? He was already organizing, you know, against brutal murders that the white supremacist pig guards were doing to new African inmates at that period in time. He was one of the first individuals in the prison system who actually, you know what I'm saying, organized the petition to try to get these pigs from killing our brothers inside the prison walls and things of that nature. These are things that we must learn about. Him being one of the first individuals that was a jailhouse lawyer. You know what I'm saying? We need to understand that a lot of these brothers were studying law. They were their own lawyers. You know what I'm saying? Fighting back against them and trying to find different ways to get themselves out of captivity. A lot of them was jailhouse lawyers. W.L. Nolan was one of the first jailhouse lawyers around that period of time in the 60s, in the late 60s. But individuals like Katari Garden, he's the progenitor of Black August. You feel me? Like this individual, Katari Garden, a revolutionary, a freedom fighter, the Black guerrillas, this man was the individual who took the torch when George Jackson was assassinated to bring Black August into existence by adding and doing things that was against the state. You know what I'm saying? That was resistance against the state. Doing like little things in there, like little ceremonial rituals and things that would become Black August. You see what I'm saying? So this is why Black August Memorial is so important. So BAM means Black August Memorial. Bar means Black August Resistance, and we know Black August Resistance is simply that we're going to resist against this oppressor, this terrorist, colonial settler government. No matter where we are in the empire of the United States of America, we're going to resist against it 365 days calendar year. We must fight. We must resist. So that's what Black August Resistance means to me. You know what I'm saying? But, I mean, a lot of people throw their own little twist on Black August Resistance, you know what I'm saying, and things of that nature. We talk about the slave revolts, the slave rebellion, and things of that nature. Pacific freedom fighters who got birthdays and things of that nature going on through this month. But specifically what people need to understand with Black August Resistance is it's about the political prisoners. It's about the captured combatants who remain in prison. It's to bring attention to their specific cases is what I think of when we talk of Black August Resistance. Putting these individual names out there, getting behind them, organizing for them to get these brothers out of prison, because people got to realize we still got too many important political prisoners that still captured, that we should be putting all our power of resistance behind to get these brothers out of prison, fighting to get these brothers out of prison. So, yeah, that's bam, that's bar to me.
True indeed. You know, I want to add on to that. Another aspect of bar is Black August Martyrs, right, you know, which is the foundation.
Yeah.
You know, many people know the Black August Martyrs, but very few know the Black August Martyr aspect of things. Those are the ones. Everybody who is a martyr pay their ultimate sacrifice to death to stand for the people to make something significant. And also, you know, Katara Carter was the first one to start organizing and start the planning for Black August upon the death of all the individuals that were already assassinated. That's the Conrad George, Johnny Jackson, Jane McClain, William Christmas, W.L. Nolan, you know, Cleveland Edwards, Alvin Jacob Miller, and all the other individuals that had been murdered and killed in the prison system as well, the unsung heroes and other individuals, you know, that had been murdered as well. But they were already planning that. You're already planning that already in spring of 1978, officially in March, you know, and upon his assassination, August 1978, medical session, August the 1st, you know, it went to manifestation by the brother who initially planned with him. They went to the manifestation next year, that following year, which was within in the middle of Ramadan, you know. So some of the tenets in regards to the fasting aspects, you know, so were adopted from a lot of different things that were going on. It's around it. So a lot of people started calling it the Revolutionary Ramadan or the Revolutionary Ramadan at the time, but it was Black August. And during that time, during those Black August time, the first initial Black August, is also another Black August that sprung up in San Quentin, and it wasn't sprouted in Soledad. Because they had a communication with the brothers initially, the ones who were planning it in San Quentin, so they did the same thing in Soledad. You know, so it was basically two founders, but San Quentin was the foundation. You know, and it wasn't until later on the aspect of Black Resistance started coming to being when they were after the brothers made the transition to being new Afro-Revolutionary, new country African citizens. Because initially when they first started, you know, the brothers wasn't up on the ideology of being new African, even though people was aware of it. Even WNL was aware of it. You know, they were aware of the land fund and all the stuff going on. They was aware of all that. During the 60s and 70s, they were aware of that, you know. But they didn't make that transition until later on. When they made that transition, that's when the new African Independent Movement got involved in commemorating Black August that it is now. And that where you see different things like the RNA 11, which is coming out of the new African Independent Movement, the aspect of a guy that have a daily birthday and, you know, the aspect of all the slave revolts and different things that transpired during the month of August, and even though the Seminoles, New African Wars, and the Maroon villages, and you know that when all that came to existence, you know, to push it forward.
Yep.
And it also brothers that wanted to be an isolated thing, even though when it first started, it was announced on KPFK by a sister named Kisifu and a brother named Jashiri. They announced it as well, you know. Also, the Free College, it was a college that came out to the streets that they were strictly focused on pushing the revolution that coached up Black August. That was the Free College were doing at that time in particular, right? But when they came to KPFK in 1979 and announced it, they announced it the same day they started doing in the prison. They announced it the same day and month on the streets as well during that time. You know, they announced it.
Right.
A lot of brothers on the street were getting persecuted because they were practicing Black August. You know, on the street, they were getting hunted down by the SSA, with the SSA and the other little government agencies, the security apparatus, they were hunting these brothers down, locking them up and persecuting them and seeing gangs, all the different things, because they were practicing Black August. Because to them,
yes, sir,
they felt that Black August was a time for them to murder pigs. You know, that's the way they looked at it. They looked at it as a time to murder pigs. And there was the propaganda going around at that time regardless of everything, especially when they looked at the retaliation for the pig who killed W. A. Nolan. When they persecuted the charge of Solidarity Brothers, which is the Comrade George, John Calacy, and Fleeto Drongo. That's where they got persecuted for that aspect of things. And that became a tradition within their minds that was going on. You know, they're just a little understanding for people who are listening so they can know get a better reality about things, right? In regards to what they're doing and how they're doing certain things, how they're practicing, how they commemorate the information they're getting, what they're listening to, you know, the stuff is out there. It's out there, you know.
Yes,
you still got brothers, you know what I'm saying, that were part of the original committee that still behind any enemy lines, you know.
Right.
Still behind enemy lines. Right now to the day, still commemorate, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that, you know. I just want to mention that aspect of things, man. So we can just understand where we people, you know. Why do you think people should commemorate Black August? Why do you think they should commemorate Black August?
I think people should commemorate Black August because I feel like Black August is a basis for people to really understand their reality. I think at some point during this time here in the Empire of the United States of America, new African communities, new African families, I think Black August is the perfect time for us to actually, you know, even though a lot of us are, like I said, a lot of us are struggling 365, don't get it twisted. There's a lot of us out here putting in the work 365, 24/7, you know, out of this calendar. But, you know what I'm saying, we always got to understand that the majority of our people are not on that level yet. You know what I'm saying? They're not there, you know what I'm saying, because they're so busy trying to survive 5 days out the year. So I feel like Black August is a time where we can, you know, build, you know what I'm saying, nation build and community build and get serious. And I have to put the emphasis on that, on getting serious. And what I mean by getting serious is that basically getting our community on code, you know what I'm saying, on protocol, because we are in war, man. You know what I'm saying? I can't even put it no more plain and simple than that. We are in a 365 war. You know what I'm saying? It might not be in a, you know, it might not be the war that people think or see, you know, when they're looking across seas and they're seeing all these third world communities, you know, gun battles and things of that nature. People got to understand there's many aspects of warfare, you know what I'm saying? And your oppression is a major part of warfare. You see what I'm saying? So I think Black August is a time to really get serious about resistance. And to understand what armed resistance looks like, and not just the physical gun, you know what I'm saying? I'm talking about resistance mentally, you know what I'm saying? Even spiritually. You can throw the spirituality in there too as well, because we know warriors are spiritual too. But it's about getting disciplined, getting focused, resetting, and learning about our social, material conditions and what we are up against. And I feel like people should commemorate and get involved with Black August and implement Black August in their communities, in their households. You know, that's something that we definitely just need at this point in time if you want to look at the reality of what's going on with us right now here in America in 2023. Can't even get no more specific than that, is that our reality needs what the gang members say, it needs a G-check. You know what I'm saying? Our reality needs a G-check at a certain point out this year, ancestral G-check, you know, out at some point of this time of the year, because we know every day we got to wake up in the society and survive, self-preservation. You know what I'm saying? Because we are constantly being attacked, whether it's through the school system, the food system, the prison system, the political system. You know what I'm saying? All these little systems that Americanism was founded on. You know what I'm saying? Settler colonialism was founded on. These things are attacking us every day. So I feel like Black August is that time out the year when we can actually sit down and plan, plot, strategize our objectives, our agendas, and our goals. You know what I'm saying? What are we trying to do, you know, as a people? You know what I'm saying? We can't keep just, you know, letting us, you know, we just can't keep going out throughout the year and we don't get serious about what's going on with our reality here in the empire. Because right now, New African communities are third world communities. I don't know why, you know, I can't be no more specific than that. You know what I'm saying? I know a lot of people out there in our communities that don't know about this type of, you know, political consciousness and things of that nature. This is the perfect time to get them into that, to bring them aboard, you know what I'm saying, to teach them revolutionary science, to teach them political science, teach them New African political science and things of this nature. I think Black August is the perfect time and period for us to get serious about the war.
Okay, true indeed, indeed. Now, I understand that you're the National Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Republic of Africa, right, and deal with political prisoners.
Right.
And catching your average citizen. Tell the people about the Catch New African Citizen, you know what I'm saying, and why they should get support, and was a New African political prisoner as well.
I ain't hear the last part of that question. Can you repeat the last part of that?
Okay, I was saying tell the people about the Catch New African Citizen and New African political prisoner, why they should support them. And also, basically, can you give, like, a working definition of some of these terms so people can understand exactly what you're talking about?
Terminology as far as, like, political prisoner, prisoner of war, and things of that nature?
Yeah. You know, and also distinction in regards to what is a New African political prisoner, what is a New African POW?
Oh,
yeah. You know, those are the terms as well. Got all those same terms.
Yeah. Right. Well, I just start off that way about the terminology of what a New African political prisoner is and prisoner of war. Now, the distinction is, the difference is that when one individual, you know, takes on the citizenship of being a New African, you are now a part of a government. You are a citizen of a government. You are a citizen of a nation. And on broader terms, people need to understand that this is how world politics operate. You know what I'm saying? It's like once you distinguish what you are and what you are a citizen of, now things will go on a whole nother level when it comes to your reality, especially here in this empire of the United States of America, your reality, and even across the world. You know what I'm saying? Like when a person becomes a citizen of something, of a nation, you know, This is when things are serious, you know what I'm saying? And once you take on that New African citizenship, now you're saying that you're a part of a nation. You're a part of a government. Whether that government is free yet or not, you see what I'm saying? You're still letting the world know, and you're letting the people know what you are and what you are, you know, what you are a citizen of. So that's the distinguish the difference between United States prisoners, you know what I'm saying, people who take on American citizenship and things of that nature, somebody who identifies as being American, or say for instance, you identify as being an African-American or just a plain American. So now you're saying that you're a part of the United States of America. You're a citizen of that nation. So you will be looked at as a U.S. prisoner or a U.S. political prisoner or a U.S. prisoner of war, things of that nature, if you participate, you know what I'm saying, when it comes to what we know as our army or anything dealing with that nature when it comes to militarism, you know what I'm saying, or military. But specifically the new African political prisoners and prisoner of war, they are identifying themselves as citizens of the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa, and they have been captured as so. Whether it was captured because of their political beliefs, or was they captured in an armed conflict, or armed struggle, or armed, you know what I'm saying, event that took place that they were doing in solidarity with their citizenship of being a new African or being a part of a new African nation. You see what I'm saying? So you got new African political prisoners, and you got new African prisoners of war. New African prisoner of war prisoners who were captured in armed conflict, armed confrontation, and things of that nature. That's what a prisoner of war is, somebody who was captured in military action. You know what I'm saying? Military acts or military situations and things of that nature. Now, a political prisoner, a new African political prisoner, is an individual who's been targeted, constantly harassed, you know what I'm saying, surveillance, even though prisoner of war get that treatment too, but I'm just putting it in the specifics of a political prisoner, individuals who are specifically targeted by opposition apparatus, like the government, the CIA, the FBI, the Gestapo police departments, you know what I'm saying, the occupied neighborhoods. These individuals are targeted solely on their political beliefs and are you know, arrested or captured on that, based on that, their political beliefs and things of that nature. So that's the difference between a new African political prisoner and a new African prisoner of war. One was captured because of armed action, armed conflict, and things of that nature. One was captured based on their political beliefs and their threat, you know what I'm saying, or deemed as a threat because of their political actions or political beliefs and things of that nature. And the reason we should support these individuals is because these individuals are individuals who are, like, again, what is Black August standing on? What does Black August mean? These are individuals who sacrifice themselves for a people, a distinct people, communities. You see what I'm saying? But overall, these are individuals who are fighting for our liberation. They are fighting for our independence. They are fighting for our human rights. So we keep it in the proper context. These are individuals who are fighting for our human rights. You know, you have some individuals who are fighting for civil rights. That's cool. You got to fight on that front as well. But these individuals are individuals who were specifically fighting for our, you know what I'm saying, that Malcolm X spoke so eloquently about. This is a human rights struggle. So many new African prisoners of war and political prisoners, they are in prison because they are human rights activists or organizers and freedom fighters and things of that nature. So they're fighting for our human rights as a human people in the global community. So on that alone, it should be one of the reasons why you should support them, like them, and fight to get them out. You know what I'm saying? A lot of these individuals have been in prison over 50 to 60 years. You know what I'm saying? They're averaging over 30-plus years in these humane slave camps across America. So I feel like it's a duty, especially if you call yourself a new African. You know, if you call yourself a new African, that should be a duty for you to fight for these new African political prisoners, prisoner of war, and political prisoners, period. Because, you know, I'm not even going to, you know, leave nobody out, it's, you know, when it comes to that type of, you know, people being captured by this government, being captured by these police departments, that we should be fighting for these individuals because they fought for us.
Oh, true indeed. Appreciate that response. At this time, I want to open up the line of a few callers, right? If you have any question, comment, or statement, your announcement, please press 1 to open your line up. If you have any question, comment, or statement, please press 1 to open your line up for all the listeners. Please press 1 if you have any question, comment, or statement. Hold on, let me see. Hold on, let me see right quick. Hold on. 562-212. If you have any question, comment, statement, please just hit your time announcement. 562-212. Your line is open. Go ahead.
Wow, Usi Augusto, Agusti, Salamu, brother.
I was conversation with you too. How you doing, Mama Shakar?
I was listening, but I was so hoping that the audience would participate more. But you guys covered so many years and the different transitions that this has gone through, and this 54th year. Am I wrong?
Yeah.
How many?
Yeah, 54 years.
Whoa, that's a long time. And to transcend, and before they started celebrating, there have been so many other people that have became educated in prison, realizing that it's an extension of slavery. And the thing that fascinates me the most is that back when they supposedly freed black people, they didn't do the normal thing you would do, or the traditional thing, or the basic thing, like give a plebiscite or have that. Black folks did their best to get where they could without any or some semblance of what they should have earned through all that they had gone through that slave time. But the only thing is that's not over. What they did was they created the prisons, and in the 13th Amendment, people didn't get a chance to vote, or people didn't get the chance to rally around or be heard. You're no longer a slave, but if you go to prison. And that there was what helped me turn around and understand what prisons meant. Some people, like I grew up thinking that a lot of folks were committing crimes against the people. But it was a forced interaction. It was something that was set up to happen so that they could keep making money. This whole system is built on making money and keeping the money. And when you get a clear understanding of what position our community is in and other communities that are not considered a part of this majority, and even the people that are part of the majority, they're just victims of their own circumstances. However, we catch a lot by losing our families, our friends, our husbands, you know, through this prison system while they make money. They made so much money that they created private prison. I listen to anyone. And that you need to know whose you are and what really position, what position you really take in this country. And the best way to understand what your position is to study and find out where you want to be. And if you're anything like what happened to these brothers, you want to study. You want to know the things that they're not teaching. And these two brothers, I can't even say. It's great to have someone take it on and pass it and keep going and explain it and share it and build a community around it and connect the communities globally, because it's the same thing from where we all began. It just humbles me. I just got caught up listening to you all tonight.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. You want to get in the feed right there for that brother Hockey?
Did we lose it?
Oh, no, I'm still here.
Right on. I've enjoyed everything. I've been listening every chance I get to stay informed by how you all are controlling this and to hear from other people that are listening.
True indeed. Great for you. You know, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just about to say I'm appreciative to Mama Sakari because she's always interacting with me on social media, you know, like on stuff that I be trying to put out there and things of that nature. She's always, you know, commenting, letting me know that, you know, something that I posted is great, you know what I'm saying? So I want to thank her for that because, you know, I mean, we stand on y'all's shoulders, you know what I'm saying? We coming after y'all. So it's like, I just want to say right now why I got her on the phone, I appreciate you, Mama Sakari, for sure.
Right on. But it's really historical evidence to see the future. Well, it was a future for me years back because at that time, yeah, you know, I just knew what we had to do then. And, you know, you think that's when it is then. It's right then. But then when you check back the history that's come before you, you know, all the way back to the rebelling, not even to get on those ships, and then rebelling on those ships, and then rebelling when they got here, because you know it just wasn't just. You know, you don't do that to people. You don't steal their history and lock them up, make money. That's just a dollar. So everyone in this country basically have to understand who they are and where they are, and they just might be surprised at how close they are to being considered a product of this country or a servant of this country. You'd be surprised. You think you get a Social Security number for some other reason, and you find out it's all about a purchase. A purchase of you. It's yeah. I'm gonna be quiet and listen. Y'all got me wild tonight. Just listening to it all. It, you know, and the way you went through each generation of what happened in the system. Like, I remember the Soledad prison ports in Soledad and learning about them. And George was the reason that I heard about them. And he was overwhelming. We considered him in the party, Field Marshal, you know, Field Marshal of the Black Panther Party. He was a part of our political education.
I can't hear you, Mom.
I didn't say anything. I had to stop. I'm over a little overwhelmed. I'm listening.
Okay. I got you. The interesting thing about all this, you know, is the aspect of carrying on the individual memory, right? Carrying the memory, there were black girls about commemorating the individuals, you know what I'm saying, their spirits, their resistance, their mind states, their ideals, their integrity, their morals, things that they can pass it, commemorate it on so their energy, their spirit would never die. Through the spirits, it would never die. So that's the more important thing about it. You know, you yourself have been and still are a part of living history and living legacy, right? Because a lot of your comrades that were initially there with you and the conception of a lot of these things, be it New African Independent Black Liberation Movement, so forth and so on, the prison, California Black Prison Movement, so forth and so on, right? A lot of the individuals are not around anymore to talk for themselves. Through you, you know, other individuals like you, you can share their stories, you can share their pictures, you can share their thoughts, you can share their words. You can give a little preview of how some of the individuals were, because you were directly around, you directly worked with them, you directly struggled with them, you made sacrifices with them, sacrifices for them. So you yourself are a beacon of light and a beacon of inspiration, and you exemplify spirit resistance as well yourself. Just by still being around, still being active, and still not wavering, and you still pushing the line. So that's a lot of encouragement for myself, Brother Haki, and all the other y'all individuals that haven't lived as long as you are experienced as much as you have experience of being around me, the thing that you've been around. So that's right there. Is you're a gift to us to just be even just expressing this. You just still have a sane mind to think about it. There are a lot of people older and younger than you are suffering dementia, sick or deceased or health issues, but you still around moving and shaking and doing things and still determined to do the work, to carry on the mission. So that means a lot within itself.
Yeah, I paid attention to Queen Mother Moore and Sister Dara Abubakari, Saini Shakur, and definitely Dr. Matulu for sure. Lumumba, I could just go on. And that doesn't even mention the people that I work with growing up as a youth myself in the party. But, these people, they help you understand how to really live on being more than someone. I don't even know how to really say it. You know, to someone that doesn't care about your life, except for to make a buck off of it. And that's why they imprison so many people. People, like I know when I was younger, I thought prisons were the people that were committing crimes against us in the community. But the biggest crimes were being committed, you know, in those offices where they, made law and pointed it directly in our community. And, you know, if you just look at people, you don't understand why there's not a history of you. I learned, thank goodness, from the folks growing up when I listened to the people when I was growing up. But now to hear you all carry on, it reminds me of the same folks. You know, the line hasn't been polluted. It hasn't been diluted. It's been straight, and it's welcome.
True indeed. To me, the way I look at things is that, once you obtain certain information, once you take something, an oath, an obligation, anything, it's to the end. It therefore is honesty. So once you commit yourself, he or she must be willing to carry out the duties of said such organization, collective formation, whatever it may be, right, and to their demise. Irregardless of what anybody else doing, irregardless of 300 people in the organization, and you the only person doing something, you still got to do it because you set an obligation. Everybody set the obligation as an individual, not an obligation as the organization, but an obligation as an individual. So whatever you're doing, you will be doing what you told the obligation, not what they told the obligation for. You know, you got to move forward. But you still got to function together as an organization, as a clique, as a unit, as a formation, whatever it may be. You still got to function that way. And then when the accountability comes in regards to, like, you got to ask people, like, what's going on? You know, what the business is? You know, we're going to be doing this? Or what's up? You know, how are we going to move forward? You know, that organized structure comes in, the organization unit. But, you know, that's the way I look at things from that perspective. Where it makes sense to me, you know. I'm not even worried about people that are not doing what I'm doing. Worry about what I'm doing. You know what I'm saying? Sure. If I say I'm going to do it, that's the way I look at things. If I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. That's what it's about, you know.
Yes. Oh.
Okay.
That's what it's about, you know. It just be good to have these types of conversation. We need certain types of platform. You know, we carry a legacy on now by Jeb saying we enjoy the University Radio. That's a legacy within itself, you know.
Mm.
Jeb by the name George Jackson. Jeb by what that name means to people behind him behind. Jeb, what happens to you for having a George Jackson book, or what happens to you for having an Ebony magazine, or what happened to you just by having a tattoo, or saying certain things, or even speaking Swahili, what happened to you by doing those things, you know?
Yeah.
What happened?
Yes.
You know, that means a lot, you know? People are still suffering. People are sick now with medical issues, health issues, because they refuse They refuse, you know what I'm saying, to stop saying these names and stop commemorating black. Oh, people are sick now to today. People have perished for this, had died.
For
refusal, you know what I'm saying, to surrender these names and these titles, the ideas, these customs.
Yep.
So this is real. This is real, real, you know? It's real, real, you know. I know it's a lot of things going. It's a lot of things going on in Jamaica. People doing a lot of different things, right? You know, in regards to a lot of things. Like this whole month is a month for the UNIA, so that's understandable. You know, a lot of people UNA formation doing something because Garvey was busy a whole month from the beginning to the end. He was busy, you know. Okay. So that's this whole month is remembrance for them, you know. There's a lot of the Move family had things going on this month.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so they doing things, you know. The PG had things going on this month. You know what I'm saying? So the PG, New African Independent Movement, you know. People from Napa were doing certain things. You know, so it's a lot of different people were doing certain things. You know, it's the month of Ogun in Europe and Ifa, I think. I think it's the month of Ogun, I think, this month or something like that. If I'm not mistaken, I think it's the month of Ogun. But they doing festivals too as well this month.
Yeah, but there's a day in each week, you know, that Ogun comes up and other here goes my brain. And the other Orishas. That's what, 5 days.
Yep, five days.
And Orisha comes up, And I'll say Ifa is, but Ogun for sure.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of little festivals going on, man. So, you know, there's a lot of resistance in there, man.
Right on.
Hold on right quick. Yeah, I was just looking at something. I got throw it off track now. I respond to a message. I got throw it off track again. My bad.
It happened.
I got throw it off track. You know, what I want to say, you know, what we're doing right now is propagating, right? You know, history is a weapon. History is a weapon that can be used to enslave us. It's a weapon used to liberate us. And it's an our choice of how we utilize it, you know, as individuals, as a New African Nation, as a collective people, or as a formation, whatever we deem it is on us, how we use it, right? But it's also us individuals, how we use it within our tail to transform ourselves. You're going to transfer ourselves for the better, we're transfer ourselves for the best, for the worse, you know. So it's all on us how we utilize the information because it's a weapon. We can use it against people, or we can use it to build. It can be used to build or used to destroy. So it's on us in regards to the information we have, you know, and how we utilize and how we move forward in our predicament right now as people. There's a lot of suffering going on, you know. Mama Scott, let me ask you a question, right? You know, but when you were going to see Elmo Geronimo Pratt, Qatar, God, other individuals in California prison system, right? How hard was it for brothers to get in mail, or what the situation about people getting mail and support then? How hard was it? Was it hard? Was it easy? What was the condition then in regard to receiving mail, getting mail, and, you know, and just corresponding to people? How was it?
You know, it was, I think, just as crazy as it is today. They, you have to fill out a form. You have to qualify. You have to make sure that everything is in order of the city, the state, and then you have to follow whatever bylaws, these little laws in these prisons, even for visitors, and they say who can and cannot come. Geronimo was in prison, and Geronimo was in prison, and I was really a witness to him not even being where they said he was. But at the time, I think I was out of the country or something, and the sister who was the driver, she testified in the case for him, you know, that he was somewhere else. And they still sent him to jail for 28 years. So while he was in jail, I went to visit him, and it took me a while to even know where he was. I got back from where I had been, and I was listening to someone. They were talking about Geronimo, and I said, oh, let me go visit. I haven't seen him. I need to go and pay, you know, pay reverence to my comrade brother, who was one of my favorite people and continued to be. So when I got there, he said, you know, after we talked and visited a while and got to reminisce, and he said, you know, I have plenty of visitors, and there's this one brother who needs someone to, and so would you go see him? And he gave me the name of Jeffrey Cotard Galden, and I went to see the brother, and he explained to me what he needed me to do to stay in contact with his attorney. He had just caught a case inside prison where they kind of set him up. He would, to see them come out of those prisons, that's what, I mean, like I had to have a decent conversation or a decent something to say. You have to strip before you come out of those cells. Then you get handcuffed to walk down, and I think it's several halls you walk down before you get clothes on. And then they put you in chains from your wrist to your waist, sometimes around the neck, and then the chain goes from the waist, and another chain goes down to the feet, and they're together. So you're making these funny steps. So they're coming to visit, and then they put you in a secure a room that's closed off from everybody. And it's, in California, you know, that an earthquake could pop up anytime. They lock the visitor in a legal room, and they let the inmate in from the other side in these chains. They put him inside another little jail-like structure with mesh and a barrier, you know, so there's no way to touch. There's nothing. You can barely feel the person's breath coming through the little mesh. And then they got they're chained down like this, and then they lock you in. And my thing is like, what, you know, if you're not going to come for me if the earthquake happens, oh yeah, we'll come to you first. And yeah, right. But he had caught a case where he was coming on to a visit, and the guards were breaking in a new guard. And so they kind of set him up because they know if you do a certain thing and a certain move, well, the inmate's going to think you're setting him up for a hit. I mean, these are the kind of things that go on in these places. It's not just getting in. You have to fill out almost a job certificate, and you can't have any records. You can't have anything that they could use keep you from coming in to visit. And a lot of people don't get visits. So when you have another inmate to tell you, you know, these brothers need visits. Well, first of all, Geronimo was one of the leaders in the Los Angeles chapter, and he served in the military. And so he knew what he had to do in his position, and he did it. Any brothers that he could help or assist, that's what he did while he went through his trial. So that's how I got to meet Afeni. I had heard about her before, Afeni Shakur. I had heard about her before from Bobby Seale's brother, John Seale. He was telling us how renowned she was and how authoritative and how she could get this done and that done. Because a lot of times he was teasing us because we were always getting accolades for how we worked in the field. And he thought we was going to, you know, be jealous about it. And we was like, man, if you're saluting this sister, we want to meet her. You like her? Oh, to meet her, I'm meeting her on a visit with Geronimo. And we were together from that point on. And that sister is a commander. So these are the people that I've had in my life. And we all have to go through those. You go through the metal detectors. You go through a whole giving up your history to get in there just to keep up with family members, just to keep up with people that you know, just to be sure that these brothers aren't being murdered right away. Because if you don't keep up with your people, you don't know where they're going to be. I hope I got to the point. I just went all over the place, and I really want to hear you guys more than I want to hear me. Because today I'm in one of them moods. It's one of them blues moods. Blue and black.
Well, you know, what I'm gonna say, you know that, certain things happen for a certain reason, right? You know, and certain things are necessary. In regards to looking at the movement behind people behind enemy lines, right? It's actually the same movement. It's just an extension of the exterior. We're going. It's an interior thing that is extension of the exterior going on the outside. It's just like the Black Panther Party will function on the outside. They would have Black Panther Party chapters in San Quentin prison. They would have Black Panther Party chapters in Angola. They have Black Panther Party chapters in Washington State and other places, right? You know. And also had Black Panther Collective Group in Staggered New York, other places like that in the prison system, right? So it was an extension of the same thing. You know, I had Nation Islam on the street, that Nation Islam in the prison. You know, there were very things that had a dual nature inside and outside. And, you know what I'm saying? Those functions, you know, even with Comrade George was a member of the Central Committee of the Black Panther Party. You know, he was part of the Central Committee, and you look at it. He was the first field marshal. Now, you look at a lot of the documents and certain things, it might say underground, on the clothes, because they were his primary function as an underground apparatus and certain things. And that's why I'm a giant car guy. He was leading their position in certain things, you know. That was his position in regards to the way he was doing, moving, organizing in a guerrilla way, you know, because when you look at things from respect of the Panther Party, a lot of their activities were modeled after people before them. Extremely motivated by RAM. Because, you know, Bobby Seale, he knew both were part of RAM, the Soul Divide, which is a student group. RAM had all them different organizations that was up under them. You know, because they had a above ground and an underground platform. So they had a lot of organizations that they had leadership in or influence over, right? And, you know, you look at that aspect, you know, he and Bobby them already knew about the Black Panther aspect because a lot of them individuals from RAM already created their Black Panther Party already, which was an aspect of them relating to SNCC and Lion County Freedom Organization. And also RAM influenced SNCC to be revolutionary, you know, to pick up the banner of Black National Revolution and so forth and so on, right? So when you look at those things and look at what's going on in regards to a movement, how they influence people today, right? It's a great significance. They would need to keep on pushing and moving forward, right? You know, people need to know their proper history.
Yes.
That's why Brother High Key be spreading the history, because he's trying to get things out there in regards to the proper contents of things so people can know exactly what's going on, to know the direction where they're coming from, where they're going to, you know, what certain things are going for. You got to know the foundation of certain things, you know, so people can get a better understanding, see how things relate, see how people connect, and just see how a lot of everything in these movements that people be talking about, they're all interrelated. Yeah. Like the Black Liberation movement, interrelated with the African Independent Movement. You have Independent Movement, interrelated with the Pan-African National Movement. You know what I'm saying? All these movements interrelated. Some people, some people's in 3-4 different movements at one time, you know, but they were doing the certain works, you know.
Yes.
That's still going on today. It hasn't changed, you know. Depending on where you live at, it hasn't changed because people live in certain places and they know locally that they're doing certain things locally. But nationally, they might be plugged inside national on a different ideological base in regard to what they're plugged into locally. But they're still doing the work in general. You know, things like that. But the whole thing got to make sense to people. You know, every time I talk to somebody about any kind of movement work, I always let them know, you know, that the first thing that you got to think about is that
your family are gonna turn against you. They're the first one gonna turn against you because you got new ideology that you don't understand or something that you want to taught or conditioned program to accept. They're gonna be the first one to turn against you. Then you gotta look at your friends. They're gonna turn against you next. Then you gotta think about what can happen to you for being a part of this form. What happens to being a part of the ideology? Because in the revolutionary, it's not legal. So you gotta think about being incarcerated. You gotta think about being attacked financially, socially, verbally. You gotta think about, you might go on a run. You gotta think about you gotta go on the ground. You gotta think about these things seriously. What's gonna happen if I'm going to party? What's gonna happen? We're gonna sacrifice. I might have to move to a whole other state. I might move to another country. I might change my whole identity, name, everything. I might forget about everybody. So those are things that I consider because this is not legal, according to them anyway. Those are things I look at realistically, and like Malcolm X said, don't join an organization if you don't know anything about it, And those people be doing, people be romanticizing. They pick up uniforms and banners and flags and badges and pick up pistols and rifles and everything and just, all of a sudden, they said. They walking around. Okay, I'm gonna name myself said. Just because their name is popular, I'm gonna name myself this. But they ain't got no political education. They ain't got no education behind the barrel of the gun.
Gotta know your tradition.
They don't know nothing. All the organizations preceded them in the 60s and 70s. They had education. Even the 50s, they had education. Like the Mama.
Yeah.
You had to take oaths to be in part. You had to take oaths in every position in my mom, from the platoons, from the community aspect, whatever part of the my mom that you're a part of, you had to take oaths for it. You had to take them oaths, no matter what part you're part of. It doesn't matter if you're a man, woman, child, whatever. You had to take them oaths. And you violate them oaths, you know what time it is.
Yes, sir.
They wasn't discriminating.
My mom detained me.
They wasn't discriminating, It led a long revolution until they got it independent,
Yeah. Now, when you talk about those movements back there, like Stokely, Kwame Nkrumah, I got it wrong. But Stokely is so man. And him and Imam Jamil Al-Amin, Rap Brown. Those were the comrades when the party formed that linked, and we got to spend time. You'd be surprised what was linked with what if you don't study, if you don't even pay attention to what's available.
It's so much going on in regards to that, right? When you look at things, in regard to passing these torches on. I've been seeing so many over the years, people saying certain individual passing the torch and they're deceased, right? How can a deceased man, a woman pass you a torch without nobody else knowing it? I was like, damn, stuff like that don't make sense to me. If you're part of an organization or a collective or formation, those are like collective decisions. So how can a one individual get a toy pass to him or her without nobody else knowing it, without no verification?
Right.
But, yeah, you're right.
That doesn't make sense to me. It's a lot of lying going on. Or people wait till people deceased. They go out saying, they were my brother, they were my sister, what I want to ask you, Mom Shakar. When you were growing up, I know with elders around you, right? Was elders around you saying that they related to no elders or something, knowing other people, but in which they really were lying? Was there actually going on during that time? Or that's something that we started seeing later on? Were you seeing it during your time?
It may have been happening, but you know, the task I was given, I didn't have time to do anything but make sure who was around me was safe, or you know, for safe to be with me, or me safe to be with them. But we spent a lot of time studying, and the brothers came back from Vietnam, and they was teaching us, and they was, you know, teaching us everything we needed to know for survival. And then we learned how to create a business for ourselves. I mean, like, people sell the kids were selling newspapers, the little newspaper boards. We were selling the Panther papers. And we got I think 15 cents. We had to turn in a dime. I can't remember exactly which way it went. But for me, every day, that meant I could eat at, because I was eating meat then, I could eat at the steakhouse. I can get a baked potato and some vegetables and a steak after I finished working. And we take out like 150. But yeah, no, we had to go to training. We had to learn. We had to find out. We had to attend meetings. We had to know what we were getting into. We knew the history. I mean, we were in study at least four days out of the week, you know. And Sunday was our biggest class because you had to know the paper. You couldn't go out and distribute anything that you couldn't tell anybody what they should read in there. So it was simple all the way down the line. Anything that you learned, you had to put in time, and you had to practice. And before you could proceed any further, they watched your deeds. I couldn't tell you. There's so many people I got to meet at one time that, you know, I was amazed when I got to meet them. I got to meet, you know, folks that were running the newspaper, people that were making sure we got the books, and they were, you know, I had to pay attention. I had to be mentally alert, mentally aware at that moment what I was doing. And young, it was easy. Nowadays, I have to really sit and focus. But then, you know, your mind is, you can focus on things and hold it. But no, it was all training, every step. Even I'd say at my mom's house, when my mother was raising me, it was a step. But then when I brought it home to her, it took her 3 times for the FBI to come for her to say the right thing. The first time they came, she let them in. The second time they came, she kept them at the door. The third time they came, she said, "This card, you go talk to this lawyer." She thought she owed them something. I mean, it's a training. Everyone around you that spends time with you learns. But if they don't spend time, they don't understand. They don't even know that they're in trouble, except when something flares up. They don't even believe that some of the things that happen, people to black folks, just regular people. You know, they get upset when somebody dies on the street and you're standing there watching. I mean, I couldn't stand and watch. No, I couldn't watch it on TV. I couldn't stand and watch somebody kill somebody in front of me, and you know he hasn't done a crime. I mean, well, they're just too caught up with the madness that this country's setting them into, to venture into. I mean, you know, you get caught up, you got to work, you got to get a home. Why do you have to struggle so hard for something that's a right, a human right? Food, clothing, housing, food. And it goes on. I mean, you just got to pay attention to what's right. I mean, and it's they teach it, you know, but when you use it, it's a different thing. But you just can't stop with that. You have to make them understand that you understand your rights as a human being of the world. I've talked too much, okay? I need to listen.
I actually got dropped out again. I ain't hear some of your stuff. You said I got dropped out, but I came on and heard you talking, right? I know we probably got about 8-9 minutes left. Brother Haki, what you want to lead the people? What you want to lead the people with? You know, in regards to any information, any contact, any quote. What are your final thoughts? You want to lead the people with?
Before I get off of here, man, I just want to go ahead and throw this in here before I get off here. For Sister Valerie Haynes, of the Northeast Political Prisoners Coalition. There's two international campaigns going on right now to free two veteran Black Panthers, and we really want to bring attention to their cases because it's very critical at this point that we support these two elder freedom fighters, and Black August is a perfect time to plug it. Right now, there's an international campaign going on for the Free Kamal Siddiqui campaign. You can join the Free Kamal Siddiqui campaign every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Zoom to help organize to free Kamal Siddiqui, a veteran Black Panther who's having a lot of health issues and things going on that's incarcerated and captured in Georgia. So, yeah, it's an international campaign to free Kamal Siddiqui going on right now. Join them every Monday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Zoom. And you can get this information on the Free Kamal Siddiqui Instagram. And matter of fact, all of social media platforms is under Free Kamal Siddiqui. So if you want to be a part of that international campaign, get with them every Monday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And last but not least, another international campaign going on for our elder comrade brother, Veronza Bowers Jr., who's been incarcerated for 50 years, veteran of the Black Panther Party. Y'all can support his campaign by supporting his new album. He has an album out because Elder Veronza Bowers, he plays the flute, and he's into a lot of indigenous music, where flute meditation is what they call it. It's like finding peace from the inner peace, from the inside. It's a spiritual music that he plays. And he has a whole album out on all platforms right now, Apple Music, any of these new digital platforms and things of that nature. This is how you can support his campaign. And you can get more information about Veronza Bowers Jr. campaign by going to his Instagram, which is under Free Veronza Bowers. Free Veronza Bowers is his name on all his social media platforms right now. And he's captured in Butner, North Carolina. So those two individuals, we really want people to get involved with and bring attention to their cases because they got a lot of health issues going on right now. So please do your due diligence and get with the campaigns to free Veronza Bowers Jr. and Kamal Siddiqui, veteran Panthers, and free all Panthers. You can get in contact with me on all social media sites under Hockey Quayle Shakur. I want to thank my comrade, Bomani Shakur, for bringing me on here. Salute to George Jackson University. Salute to all the elders that's incarcerated, that's practicing Black August right now. Much love to y'all. We see y'all. We're with y'all. We're standing firm. And that's about it, man. And like I always say, man, salimu to the Kazi, the work that we continue to do, and the work you continue to do. Comrade Bomani, shout out to Queen Mother Sakari and everybody who joined this call tonight, man. Much love to everybody, man. And, man, just get involved, man. Get involved with the organization. Study and struggle. Make that a habit, you know what I'm saying, because that's the most important part of Black August. And do yourself the due diligence of study and struggle. That's all I got to say.
Man, I appreciate you coming to the past here. Now you understand it. Appreciate the way you can do the past, present, and future. If you got any comrade, little one, social right in the line, please check out Georgia University. We have an Instagram page and a Twitter page under the same name. We have a website, which is www.georgiauniversity.edu.com. Again, it's www.georgiauniversity.edu.com. And also, New Affirmation Day is coming up shortly from March the 29th to March 31st. We're going to take a place in Dr. General Clarktown, Mission Alma, Columbus, Georgia. There are flyers on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You find the flyers, save the date, plan to be there. Look forward to being our new African people there. You know, and also, you know, if you during this month, if you got any loved ones, friends, social, anybody, anybody line, no matter if they're political or not, reach out to them, write them, correspond with them, go see them, go visit them, you know, show respect, show love to them, show them that they matter, that they care, and people care about them. Do so, you know. And if you want to get involved in a political prisoner, you know what I'm saying, the best thing to do is to write that individual and ask them what he or she wants you to do before you start making moves, you know. And it's always need. It's also legal work, legal people who engage into legality is always needed to free our brothers from behind enemy lines. I'm going to say law and the resist, law and the African movement, law and the guerrilla, free the line.
Free the line.
Right.